Hey there, Omaha. Welcome into another episode of Restaurant Hoppin'. I've got a fantastic guest for you today, but real quick, before we get to them, I have to tell you about Certified Piedmontese, because this is a brand I am so excited about. In fact, I will never forget the first time I had Certified Piedmontese. The crown jewel of my initial visit to Casa Bovina was a beautiful rib cap that was so lean and tender, it was almost silky in texture. The moment that beef hit my taste buds, I was hooked. These animals are raised all natural on a network of family ranches across the Midwest, so Certified Piedmontese is able to cut out the middleman and buy directly from the source. And while I highly encourage you to check out Casa Bovina, you can savor this beef at home, too. Whether you order off Piedmontese.com or by calling 1-800-414-3487, your purchase will be shipped directly to your front door. Plus, when you use my discount code HOPPEN, H-O-P-P-E-N, you get 25% off your order. How can you beat that? So what are you waiting for? Get some steaks, burgers, bacon, or other meats and experience the Certified Piedmontese difference for yourself today. And now to my guest. Hey there, Omaha. Welcome into another episode of Restaurant Hoppin'. I'm your host, Dan Hoppin', and my guest today is a man who has dreamed of owning his own burger joint since a very young age. And when you taste his food, you experience that passion and understand why this has been something that he's been chasing for so long. Plus, in an age when so many restaurants botch the smash patty, this is a guy who finally knows what a smash patty is and does it right. This is Nick Hyde. He is the owner of Hyde Slides Burgers and Fries. Nick, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Now, it's kind of all in the name. It might seem kind of obvious what the concept of your business is, but your business is not all just beef and deep fried potatoes. So I want to allow you to, just in case anyone is listening or watching this and they haven't been into Hyde's or they haven't even heard of it before, like, how do you explain Hyde's to someone for the first time?
Hyde Slides, I would explain it as being elevated burgers with fun toppings, as well as wraps with toppings that you would see on sandwiches, like a buffalo chicken sandwich, a Philly cheesesteak. It's mostly sandwich centric, but we like to add different things that you would see with other food items.
Yes, the creativity is not in short supply at your restaurant, my friend. And we're going to get into that. But first, real quick, if at any point someone is listening to this and they're just like, dude, I got to get here and get one of these burgers. You have a food truck. You are serving out of the Grover Inn, which is just off the 42nd State Street off the interstate. But most excitedly, you recently opened in your first solo restaurant just off 168th and Q in February, so people can stop in there and get the full experience. So there you go, Omaha. Get into any of those locations. But we have to start today with smash burgers, because I feel like that is the heart behind your concept. And so many restaurants serve what they call a smash burger, but it's really just two thin patties. To you, what defines the smash burger and what excites you about that style?
Well, everyone says, you know, anyone could cook a burger, but there's truly a science to it. To make into perfect smash patty, there's got to be a great crispy edge on it. It's got to have the juices not smashed out of it. You got to have it in a high hard sear, so that way those are staying in there. So that's what I define the perfect smash burger is, for 100%. It's got to be not too big. When I was a kid and I started, I actually did not like burgers as a kid.
That's what I saw in an interview with your mom, and she said that. And yeah. I was like, wow, this is a surprising turn of events.
It was one of those things where I was like, Mom, you're making burgers tonight? I don't want that. Come on, let's do something else. And so, after a while, I ended up having a really good burger, and I was like, okay, this is what it's supposed to be like, and I really enjoy this. So I started trying to perfect it. As a kid, I was always watching the Food Network. I can't remember what chef showed how to do a smash patty, but it just stuck with me. And I was like, that's what I want to do. I want to make those kind of burgers. So I started practicing with those at home, and that's where it all started.
Now, you mentioned that there's a science behind it, and there absolutely is. I mean, I don't know how nerdy we want to get talking about the Maillard reaction or anything like that, but can you maybe talk about that a little bit and just not just, you know, what makes a smash burger awesome, but like, what does smashing it do to the flavor and the texture of the burger?
It definitely makes it so there's a hard sear on the outside. So that's the huge key for it. When people think about smashing it, you're smashing out all the juices, but you're actually smashing the juices to be cooking into the burger almost like a confit, because you're cooking it within its own fat. So that's a huge part of making that smash burger perfect. You know, it's sometimes if you do overcook it, they'll come out real rubbery and dry, and there's a real fine line between not having the perfect one or having the perfect one and not having a good burger at all.
Go ahead.
Like I say, when you start to smash it, you'll see the juices kind of like pull up in the top of the burger, and then at that time, you know, it's time to flip it, and then that's how you know you're going to have the perfect burger.
I saw a video of you showing Cerise Cole this a couple years ago. Are you still using a frying pan as the smasher?
Yes. I've tried so many different smashers, like ones you buy, everything like that. And I was like, this frying pan works the best. Thinking about making a prototype for my own smasher.
Ooh, okay.
With like a nonstick bottom.
Nice.
Call it the Hyde Smash.
Nice. I like it. So, I mean, we're talking about a process that is very delicate that can, you know, very quickly go wrong. Like you've mm-hmm. said, you can smash it for too long and dry it out. You can smash it and, you know, let the juices release and lose all the juiciness of that burger. It's something that takes time and honestly talent to perfect. How long did you work on this process before you felt like, okay, I feel pretty good. I think I've got a good smash burger here.
So I have had this concept since about high school. I've had the name and everything mocked up since high school. So I've been practicing a long, long time. I've gone through a lot of different beef suppliers because you need the perfect amount of fat content to beef content to make sure that burger comes out great and it's not too gritty. Sometimes you'll smash a burger and the whole burger will just fall apart. And that's usually depending on the grind of the beef, the type of beef you're using. So I went through a lot of beef suppliers before I found the one that I was like, this is the perfect consistency that I'm looking for. And I think that's a huge part of making sure that everything that you're doing is coming out the way you want it to come out. So it took me a while. I would say I had the concept in high school, and then COVID happened, and that's when I bought my first food truck, was in the middle of COVID. So I had a little bit of time to develop everything while I was there, not having many events going on. I wasn't feeling like I was rushed to get out there and do something. I just wanted to make sure it was good.
All right. I love that. And we'll get into more of the backstory, but we got to talk a little bit more about burgers first.
I love it.
And now I'm someone who loves just a simple burger. We're talking like just onions, pickles, mustard, maybe ketchup, because I feel like the less ingredients you have, the more it allows the beef to sing and to be the star. But burgers also provide just a great just canvas for you to paint in whichever way you want to. I mean, you can do so many things with burgers. And you, my friend, do so many things with burgers. On your menu right now, you've got a burger with mozzarella sticks. You've got one with, I need to try this sometime because it just breaks my brain a little bit, strawberry aioli and blue cheese. Like, you are someone who is very inventive. What makes burgers such a great blank canvas to just play with different flavor profiles?
Well, like you said, though, burgers, a simple burger is really good. And I always tell people, if we're messing up on like the classic, all the other stuff's just bells and whistles. So if you're making sure that everything is good from the beginning, then the fun stuff really starts to happen. So I really like, because beef is, you know, beef goes with a lot of stuff. Buns go with a lot of stuff. And if you use the flavor profiles right, you can really hit a whole very diverse set of palates, you know. So burgers really just open up with just being a basic sandwich, you know. You can really tear any kind of sandwich, anywhere from peanut butter and jelly to a Cuban to anything onto a burger. You just got to figure out how you're going to develop those flavor profiles to make sure you hit the acidity, the sweet, the savory, the umami. It's great. I love burgers because it's just, like you said, it's an open canvas to really bring out your creativity and see what you can really bend the rules with every once in a while.
And just to be clear, if somebody is just plain Jane, just wants just that, you know, Ron Swanson type of burger with just the simple stuff, they can come in and get the Rosenblatt, and that's a fantastic burger. I had it a couple weeks ago, thoroughly enjoyed it. But I want to lean into the creative side of things, because you, over the years, have offered not daily specials, but just about. I mean, you've had a ton of specials out there. I went back and looked through all of them, and I feel like this is where your creativity really shines. I want to highlight a couple of the specials you've had over the years. There was a Southwest Nectarine Burger, which was barbecue sauce and candied nectarines, a backyard barbecue burger with a deviled egg potato salad, a crab rangoon burger, a cinnamon roll chili burger, and maybe the creme de la creme, a Thanksgiving burger with oven roasted turkey, poultry gravy, brioche stuffing, and cranberry sauce. You obviously have a very creative mind. When you're coming up with these specials or the seven burgers that are on your menu, what inspires you? Where do you draw these different textures, flavors, everything?
Great question. So I'm a huge foodie. When I'm not at the restaurant, I'm out somewhere eating or trying to learn more about food. And when I see something that really intrigues me, I'm like, let's just put it on a burger and see what happens. So the Thanksgiving one, that was one of my favorite sandwiches, you know, because when you read it, you're like, this isn't supposed to work. And then you try it and you're like, why is this working right now? And there's a lot of research and development. Sometimes I make some crazy specials and I'm like, oh, we can't post this one. This one's not good.
That's not, yeah.
This is not the one. So we'll have to, you know, pivot, try to make something else. We try to run specials two times a week. With the opening of the new space, we wanted to make sure we got our feet wet before we started really diving in and having some real fun in that kitchen. But right now we're really working on some really cool sandwiches, that we're really excited about. But the creativity of coming up with those burgers, like you mentioned before, really just comes from inspiration from other chefs, seeing what other people are making, finding out how I can develop it into my own taste, and seeing what fits on a burger and just what doesn't fit on a burger.
So where do you start? Like, let's take, as we're recording this, last week you ran a Cubano version of the burger, which obviously comes from the famous Cubano sandwich, roasted pork, ham, Swiss cheese, pickles, mustard. So you have those flavor profiles in your head, and you're thinking, okay, how do I combine that into a burger? Like, what's your thought process? How do you start to meld those two things into one?
It's a great question. So I did a stint at Bushwhackers doing pop-ups over there, and we did a Cuban sandwich as one of the specials. And so I've been having this one in my head for a long time. I was like, we got to make a Cuban burger. That's got to be what happens. And I was like, if we're going to do it, we need to smash the bun like you smash the burger, or smash this Cuban. And I was like, we're going to have to smash it and make sure that we use like a really good mustard, because that's the key to it. So it really just comes into the development, and I guess in my mind, of just like how I could take this and make it into this. And that's where it really comes from. I really enjoy using food to, I guess, bring out creativity in myself. You know, I'm not a very artsy guy. I'm not a very, but that's where my art is, I would say, is coming up with fun items to put on a blank canvas like a burger.
Is there such a thing as going too far with the creativity, or is basically anything fair game when it comes to burgers?
There could be too far, but I'm not sure where that is yet.
I haven't found it quite yet. Okay.
But I'm sure there's a line.
I apologize because I'm putting you on the spot, but maybe give me two or three of your favorite burgers you've ever created.
Okay. The Thanksgiving one was up there. Another one that's one of my favorites is one that's on the menu now. It's the Xarban, the strawberry aioli, blue cheese, and bacon. That one, like, when people read it, they're like, I don't know, but just give it to me.
It just works.
Let me try it. And then they try it, and I had a lady tell me yesterday she was the best burger she's had in her whole life. Wow. So it's one of those ones where I was like, well, see, I know, you just got to try it. Just get there. And then another one that I really liked, I keep one that keeps popping in my head is the donut burger with the strawberry aioli as well. So we did a donut burger with strawberry aioli, bacon, and it was good. It was good. But just ones that are fun. The ones that you just don't think are going to work and they work, that's when it's like, this is awesome.
Okay, so that's where I wanted to go next. And maybe you just answered my question because you listed a donut burger and a Thanksgiving burger. But I was going to ask, what are maybe one or two of the craziest burgers you've ever created? Whether it's ones that you just like are were just like, man, I don't know if this is going to work and it came out great, or you just kind of were like, ah, let's just put it on the menu and see what happens, and then it sold like gangbusters. Like, what were some of the surprising ones?
I think the number one that comes to my mind is the cinnamon roll burger. When I did a chili and cinnamon rolls, so I took a cinnamon roll, cut it in half, and had the frosting side down onto this chili. And so that one comes to mind first when I think of the most wild burger. It's definitely the cinnamon roll one. And then after that, I think that's probably where I kind of drew the line of like, all right, that was a little crazy, but it was good because it's an Omaha thing that everyone loves chili and cinnamon rolls.
I'm sure it sold like crazy because this town is crazy for that combination.
And the curiosity, just people were like, all right, let's just do it.
Mm-hmm. Now, if somebody comes into Hyde's and they look at the menu, they're going to see a theme running through, and that's the name, the names of the burgers, the Maverick, the Ranch Bowl, the Exarban, like I said, the Rosenblatt earlier. Clearly you're naming these things after, you know, Omaha landmarks or things that are very specific to this area. Why?
I just wanted to pay homage to where everything started. I mean, I grew up in Omaha. I love Omaha. It's a great town. It's a little big town, 100%. It's fun. And I even paid homage to things that used to be here, like a AAA basketball team, the Nebraska Heat. We have the Nebraska Big Rodeo that goes on. So I really wanted to pay homage to just things that people could recognize. I thought it was cool. I thought it was a fun aspect to add to the burgers to make them feel more homey, you know, make them more homegrown.
Okay, I want to get to the other half of the name of the restaurant that we haven't touched yet, and that's fries. Mm-hmm. Because you have, like, I think burgers are the highlight, but people don't sleep on the fries at Hyde Slides, because your fries are honestly some of, I think, the best in Omaha. Like, they're really crispy on the outside, but yet they're, like, soft and fluffy on the inside. That's that texture that so many fry places are looking for, and it's so difficult to achieve. I mean, don't give me the trade secrets or anything, but how do you achieve that consistency?
Just making sure you're going to have fresh oil all the time. We're changing our oil quite a bit right now, and so that's a huge part to make sure that your fries are coming out the great color with the not getting mushy and all that kind of stuff. And we needed to make sure we found a great, great fry to hold up to all the toppings we're putting onto it. We can't have like a flimsy fry as soon as you put a little cheese or a little sauce on it, that it's going to just start to flimp over and not be very good. We did a lot of testing to make sure once you put some toppings on it, let it sit for 5 minutes, we could still pick it up and still have some crispiness to it. And I think that was key, was just making sure that, I mean, we're spending an extra prime dollar on our fries to make sure we have the best fries.
I think that's the first time on this show anyone has ever used the word flimp. And I don't even know if that's an actual word, but I know exactly what it means when you say it, so it's perfect.
It described what you were seeing.
Yes, if that's not in the dictionary, 2025, we need to get it in there, because no one wants a flimpy fry.
No one wants a flimpy fry.
But that is something that stands out about your fries, because you do the loaded fry, I was going to say baskets, it's more kind of like a tray, but regardless, and you load stuff on there. We're talking steak, we're talking sauces, we're talking shrimp, we're talking, you know, all kinds of ingredients. And yet the fries on that, like on the outside that don't have as much toppings, are just as crisp as the ones that like are at the bottom of the pile, which is where so many fry baskets just fail, because they're just wet and soggy and gross. But yours aren't. And that's something that I think is really cool.
Awesome, man.
Also, I'm not going to ask you for the secret spices in your seasoning blend, but Nick Hyde, do not change that recipe, because the seasoning on the fries is excellent as well. So we talked about the burgers, and burgers kind of being this open canvas for creativity. you kind of take the same approach to fries as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got surf and turf fries with shaved steak and shrimp. You got, gosh, the banh mi fries, which just take everything that's great about the banh mi sandwich and basically puts them in potato form. But what I like about what you're doing is you're not just taking all the ingredients that you put on burgers and just repurposing them and putting them on the fries. Mm-hmm. You are intentionally creating separate dishes because they're going to work with the fries, right?
Correct. 100%. So the fries are also like a blank canvas, like you said as well before about the burgers. They're probably more blank of a canvas than the burgers are because you can really load them up with whatever you'd like to really hit those flavor profiles you're trying to hit. I really enjoy the loaded fry aspect of the business right now because it is opening up fun stuff where you're like, we can't put this on a burger, but we could put that on fries. So having a blank canvas like that's really fun. And I really think that people, sometimes when you go to a place like that, fries are fries. People are like, it's fries. That's what we're getting, you know. But I wanted to make it like, they're like, oh, let's get those fries. Or we can get those ones. Or, you know, and that's really exciting for me when people are like, I got to come back and try all the fries now. And that's really fun.
I am someone who has pretty good discipline, like when it comes to eating things like fries and chips and everything. Like usually I eat however many I want to eat, and then I'm just like, yeah, I'm good. I'm done. When I had the banh mi fries, I was just like, I'm eating every single one of these. I don't care. Like the sweet, the sticky, the spicy, everything about those fries mm-hmm. worked so well. So I don't really have a question with that. Just giving you props.
I love that, man. I love it.
What I do want to ask you is, you are obviously a man who has all kinds of creativity. You said you're drawing inspiration from going out to eat, from seeing what different chefs are doing, from mm-hmm. just drawing all kinds of different, inspiration and thinking about what can I put on a burger. And yet when you look at your menu, you've got, I think it's 8 burgers and 5 fries.
Yeah.
I can only, and I know you have daily, or not daily specials, but you got a couple specials each week. But I can only imagine how many burger ideas you have popping into your head every single day. How hard, I know why you didn't have a huge menu, because it's hard to execute that, mm-hmm. especially in a small space, mm-hmm. especially with a smaller team. So how hard was it for you to take all these ideas that you have and condense them into this smaller menu?
That's a great question. So, like I said, I've had this idea for a long time, and I've been playing around with different burgers that I would want on the menu for quite a bit. And it took me, and my mom always jokes about this. She's like, he had the menu done in 2 hours, which isn't true. It took me years to figure out what I wanted to put on that exact menu. But, I've been dialing in for, quite some time trying to figure out which ones are going to be on the menu. And after trying them and being like, all right, this one's going to be a staple. This one's going to be on a staple. And it really started out, with one less burger. The Lancer burger was not on the menu. That was just a special that I ran. I was like, oh, well, this is, and it's actually now our number one selling burger. It's our, I think personally, out of the menu burger, it's our best burger.
I agree.
And that one started as a special. So it started as one less burger. And I was like, well, what if we combine the Ranch Bowl and the Rodeo and then put them together, and that birthed the Lancer? And so I would say the develop of the menu took years, but the deciding of which burgers were going to be on there took about 2 hours for me to make sure that I was like, these are the ones that I wanted.
So to be clear, the Lancer, this is 2 ranch-infused patties, bacon, mayo, onions, and barbecue sauce.
Mm-hmm.
It's an excellent burger. You ran it for the first time as a special off the food truck
yep.
in 2021. What was the response? Because I'm sure, you know, you've run so many specials over the years, and a lot of them have gotten great response.
Right.
But that one clearly made more of an impact because it got a spot on the permanent roster. What was it about that burger that stood out?
Well, when you look at those ingredients of that burger, you think, oh, those are basic ingredients, you know? But when you break down the backbone of that burger, it's about a 4-hour burger, almost 5 hours to make all the ingredients in that burger. because we home make all the barbecue sauces, which takes about 2 hours. We do a French onion on the burger, which is caramelized way down, almost like a French onion soup, which takes about 2 hours. Everything on that burger is just handmade to a point where it's like, all right, it's really good. So it's about a 4 hour process to make the ingredients to make that burger. And then when you try it, it's just like, okay, this is working way next level. The barbecue that we make that goes with that ranch seasoning, just, it really takes it to the next level. I knew right away when I tried it that I was like, this is going to be a really good burger. And then we started running it. Somehow, luckily, we got like an amazing photo for it. So sometimes you have good, lucky camera days where you're like, oh, wow, this camera is really loving me today. And so it got huge traction. We were still a little baby truck at that time. You know, we were just doing small events. I think I was at like Big John's Billiards when I ran it. And it wasn't like I got a crazy reaction of people buying it. I just knew when I tried it that this is probably one of the best burgers that we have right now.
What I love about that burger is, I mean, it's no crazy thing to put bacon on a burger.
Right.
But what you have done with that burger, and it, like, you don't just lay strips of bacon on it. It's like bacon that is, I think it's been, and you would have to tell me because you're the one actually doing it, but I think it's been chopped up smaller and it like crisps into mm-hmm. like little bacon curls. Mm-hmm. So you're not only getting that explosion of salt and fat, but you're getting way more texture mm-hmm. than you normally get from bacon. And it works fantastically with the sweetness and the smokiness of the barbecue sauce and that creaminess of the mayo and the sweetness of the onions. I mean, it all just works.
I love that. Yeah, the bacon is actually like a southern secret is you deep fry the bacon, and that's where you're getting
deep frying things usually doesn't make them worse.
Yeah, the deep fried bacon is definitely one of those things where you're like, we're deep frying and I don't know about that. Then you're like, oh, why is it so crispy and perfect mm-hmm. every time? And so yeah, there's a big little secret right there for the bacon.
We won't tell too many people. Listeners, keep that one. Hey there, listeners. We'll get back to my guest in a minute, but I gotta remind you one more time about Certified Piedmontese. With 2024 fully in swing, maybe one of your goals this year is to eat healthier. I have a great suggestion for you. Eat more beef. More specifically, I should say, more Certified Piedmontese beef. Certified Piedmontese has less fat and saturated fat, fewer calories, and more protein per ounce than prime grade beef without sacrificing any of that tender, juicy flavor that you love. In fact, Certified Piedmontese beef has fewer calories than salmon. This beef is so lean and tender that you don't have to sacrifice any flavor. Don't believe me? Just try Certified Piedmontese for yourself. Use my promo code HOPPEN, H-O-P-P-E-N, to save 25% off your order at CertifiedPiedmontese.com, and you'll see just how delicious these steaks, burgers, brisket, and more can be. Both your taste buds and your waistline will thank you. And now, back to my guest. All right, so let's get into the third, and what I think is easily the most slept-on part of the menu, mm-hmm. and that's the wraps. And mm-hmm. you mentioned this is kind of your opportunity to take more sandwiches and incorporate them into the menu. But what made you want to get into the wrap game?
So this is a really interesting one because, like I said, I started during COVID. And big during COVID was DoorDash. And having those kind of outlets to still get your food out while you're stuck sitting there. So we were doing DoorDash out of the food truck. And I just wanted to figure out how we could take up more real estate on the app to be. So I split up my menu and I was like, I think we could do wraps, like not just like healthy wraps, not the ones where you're like, okay, I feel good after eating it. This is going to be like, I felt great after eating this wrap because it was a little indulgence. We have a couple healthy wraps. Like we got a vegetarian wrap and we've got like a crispy chicken lettuce tomato wrap. But I really wanted to come up with something that was like, oh, this is a little different. This isn't like the wraps I'm used to getting. I'm getting a Philly cheesesteak wrap. Is this a wrap? Is this a burrito? What am I eating here?
Chicken and waffles in a wrap. Barbecue chicken mac and cheese in a wrap. I mean, yeah, you bring in some wild flavor profiles.
Yeah, yeah. And the wraps are all, they're all named after rappers, and I tried to kind of, the inspiration behind each one is some of their favorite foods.
Oh, interesting.
So Snoop Dogg's favorite food is chicken and waffles, so he got the chicken and waffle wrap. I had an amazing chicken and waffles at McCoy's in Kansas City before it closed, which really inspired that dish, where I was like, this was one of the best chicken and waffles I've ever had. The restaurant closed, and I was like, I've got to pay homage to what they were doing to make that chicken and waffle as good as it was. Then we have the Outkast wrap, which is like Southern barbecue. They're from Atlanta. They got the Southern barbecue one. We got RZA. He's a vegetarian. He got the vegetarian wrap. Then we got Fresh Prince, Philly cheesesteaks for being Will Smith. He's from Philly. He got the Philly cheesesteak. And just paying homage to some of those artists and using some of the staple items to kind of represent what they were doing and kind of make food fun.
What ingredients and flavor profiles do wraps allow you to play around with that maybe burgers and fries don't lend themselves as well to?
100. It's just being an open, like a completely open canvas. So with the burger, you got to play with the burger flavors. You're not going to put a waffle on a burger. You could, but I don't know how well it would work. But it brings out being able to have a little bit more fun with items that I like, with some chicken items, some pork items, some other items that you're like, I want to have a little bit more fun here. Even some vegetarian items. We've done a few vegetarian wraps that are still very, very well. Our number one ranked wrap is actually the vegetarian, the RZA wrap.
It's delicious. That hummus is killer.
Yeah,
on there.
The flavor profile on that one is really awesome, and I wanted to have something there for everybody. You know. We don't really have like a veggie burger right now. If we do it, we would want to make it in-house and make it our own. We've played with some like Lion's Mane smash patties, which was really fun, which I think might be a thing if we can get it perfected. But I really wanted to be able to kind of bring in everybody to have something that's like really good for them, you know? So like the vegetarian wrap is very exciting for... because people call all the time, like, do you guys got a veggie burger? And I was like, no, but we got a great vegetarian wrap that you could come try. And so that does well. On DoorDash, that one's actually like number one ranked out of our wraps.
Okay. I got one more question before we get into the origin story, because I can't wait to hear more about it. But first, we've talked about burgers, we've talked about fries, we've talked about wraps. Going back over the years, I went and looked at all your specials. This is going to be a long question. Bear with me.
No worries.
You have featured, either on the truck or in one of your restaurants, maple glazed bread pudding, fried chicken sandwiches, chopped cheese sandwiches, chicken parmesan sandwiches, fried fish, patty melts, hot dogs, wings, a burger Wellington, crunch wraps, lettuce wraps, mac and cheese stuffed waffle cones, and egg rolls. Basically, if it's a fun twist on casual food or bar fare, it is fair game for you.
Yes.
Like, do those specials just allow you to really just have the whole playground available to you where it doesn't even have to be a burger, it doesn't have to be fries or a wrap, but it's just, if I see something that I think is fun, I can try it for a day and see if people like it.
That is 100% what it is. You know, it's me just being able to have some fun with food. Because when you're making the same things over and over again every day, you're like, okay, let's get a little monotony. Let's spice it up a little bit and have some fun. And that's what the specials give me a chance to do. I love watching things online and seeing what people are doing. And I'm like, okay, let's spice that up to the next notch and do this to the next notch. And that's exactly what those specials give me to do. You know, anytime I run them, I'm like, that was fun. And, you know, and then so it really keeps the spice in the kitchen for me, being like, I'm excited to come to work today so I can try to make what this crazy special idea I have in my head is. And that's really where it's getting fun, is to be able to just be like, yeah, let's make a chicken parm sandwich with mozzarella sticks and all these crazy fun items. And once once people try them, it's really cool to see the reactions of what their thoughts are with each one of those items.
How important is that to you personally? I mean, especially when we're talking about, you know, I guess it's not all that limited with the wraps on it, but, you know, 8 burgers, 5 fries, I think you've got 7 or 8 wraps.
Yep.
If you just did the same things day mm-hmm. after day after day, could get pretty monotonous. How important is it for you to have that creative expression to be able to say, yes, I've got my staple things, I've got to have those nailed, but I got to allow myself to have fun too.
Exactly. It's huge for me, you know what I mean? Because I've always loved cooking and I've always loved being in the kitchen. But like we kind of brought up, if you're doing the same thing over and over, it doesn't matter what you're doing. You do the same thing over and over, it can kind of lose the spark of what you're doing. But being able to go out there and be like, yeah, let's play with some pork today, or let's play with this awesome mushrooms we got in today, or let's play with this that we saw at the farmer's market where we're like, this is an awesome product. Let's try to see what we can do with this. Or, oh, I went to a great Indian restaurant last night. Let's do some kind of Indian twist on some food today. And that really keeps the spark alive, 100%. Some specials sell better than others, but some specials are just for me to have fun in the kitchen.
Just push the bounds a little bit and see what you can do. Yeah.
Yeah. And make sure that it's still a great time in there. The team loves it when we're getting out there and we're like, oh yeah, let's have some fun in the kitchen today. Let's whip this up today. Let's braise this for 15 hours. Let's throw this in the pressure cooker and just have fun. And it teaches, helping teach some of my guys are newer to the kitchen, and some of my guys have been veterans in the kitchen for years. And it's just having that camaraderie where we're like, yeah, let's throw that in there. Or there's someone's like, what if we did this? What if we did a peanut butter and jelly burger? And they're like, sure, let's try it, man. And so it keeps fun for everybody.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I believe I read somewhere that you went to culinary school, but you credit your mom mm-hmm. with really giving you your cooking skills. Is that right or wrong?
Yeah, my mom and my grandma. So first memories I have in the kitchen are definitely with my grandma. Rest in peace. You know, she helped me figure out everything that I loved in the kitchen. I'd go over there. We'd watch Food Network. Emeril Lagasse was probably credited next on the line there as being a great mentor for food and everything like that. Culinary school was great. I learned more stuff than I could even imagine, you know what I mean? But having that time hands-on with my family and stuff, it helps me really take it in more. You know, I wasn't much of a school guy, you know. I always was. So I got the scholarship for Metro by winning a culinary competition in high school. And that was my best grade in school was my culinary classes. And so I had a great time doing that. We won the first ever competition that Metro held for like all the schools. And it was fun. But I would have to give homage to my family on being able to kind of let me just have fun as a kid, you know, like let me play with the knife and, you know, cut this strawberry. Let me make that smoothie, you know, let me try to make this pudding that I saw on TV. And that was something that they always just were like, sure, you know, have fun cooking. We'll be right there with you. And so just baking those cookies and doing those things with your family, just don't take those for granted, you know, because you can learn some things and you can have a great time.
Now, you mentioned you had the name, you had the concept, you've had the menu ruminating in your mind since high school.
Mm-hmm.
You go to culinary school, you ended up opening your food truck in June of 2021.
Mm-hmm.
What made you say, and you kind of talked about this with COVID a little bit earlier, but what made you say, yes, this is the time, after all this time I've had this idea in my head, now is the right time to do it?
Great question. So right after school, I started working at some kitchens around town, and then I went to Kansas City and worked in a hotel at a kitchen there, and I just didn't have a great experience. I worked under like an old school grinding chef, you know what I mean? And like some days you'd go home and you're like, why am I doing this? You know what I mean? And it's just some of those old school actions where you're get Gordon Ramsay'd every night, you know, where you're like, man, why did I sign up for this? So after a while, I just said, I'm going to take a break with the kitchen. I was always into music as well. And then I started becoming a music producer and a DJ around Kansas City. I DJed in like Power and Light. I had a residency there for about 4 years. I DJed all over town, weddings, all kinds of things. And so I was like, well, I'm just going to get my creativity out like this. And so I did that, for a long time. And then, had an opportunity to open up a bar, here in Omaha. So I opened up, Carmen Nightclub when I was 26. And, it just was a huge learning experience for me because, you know, when you're 26 and, you have a nightclub, there's so much temptations in your life and there's so much that could go wrong. And I was so young to be trying to do those kind of things. And, I always say that I would never take those experiences, away because it taught me a lot about business. It taught me what a lot to do and what a lot not to do. And so I was running that, and once that had to close, I was like, what am I going to do next? And I was like, it's time to go back into food. It's time to go back to where your passion really was as a kid and go back to having some real fun. And so that's when I was like, okay, I'm going to buy this food truck. And my landlord at the time, she used to own a food truck. And she just had it sitting in her front yard or in her driveway. And I was like, I've been asking her for years, like, how much would it cost to buy that? How much would it cost? And then she would never sell it to me. She's like, nah, I'm not going to sell it. And then once everything happened, and I was like, all right, for real, I'm either going to buy it from you or I'm going to go buy it from someone else. And she's like, all right, I'll sell it to you. And then, so that's why there was a big part of my life for a little bit where I was like, I'm just not going to go in the kitchen again. Just from some bad experiences. And, so I really take pride in running my kitchen, not like in those old school way. You mess up with something, it's going to be a teaching process. We're going to make sure that we have time to work on those kind of things. No one's going to be perfect in the kitchen. No one deserves to be yelled at and wanting to go home and like, why am I even doing this? And so I take those memories that I've had in the past and wanted to kind of break the cycle on some of those techniques that those older chefs used to do to me.
Yeah, fortunately, I think that's a common theme that we're seeing in the industry now. We're seeing a lot less, you know, Gordon Ramsay pots flying in the kitchen, all kinds of expletives being thrown around. So I think that that's really healthy. I love that you're able to look back on the periods of, I don't even know if failure is the right word, but like periods of struggle in your life, like that early kitchen job or like opening a nightclub, and say, yeah, that was not a great time in my life, but it really set me up for success now. And I think your team is probably now, you know, paying the benefits. You talked about that. The last experience you had in the kitchen was not a good one. What was it for you as you're building the food truck again and you're starting to really think about food and realizing food might be your future again? What was it like for you to get back in the kitchen?
Oh, it was so fun. That's where the spark really came back in for me. It's like, my commissary kitchen for the first food truck was at a hotel down the street from me that I was like the front desk manager for a little bit at. And I could only use that kitchen from like certain hours, you know, and it was night. So it was like 8 o'clock till 7 a.m. And so we're out there in the middle of the night just trying to figure out what we're going to do for these menu items, how we're going to perfect them and everything like that. And that was some of the fun times where we're really trial and error trying to get these menus at like 1 o'clock in the morning, because that's the only time I can get into this kitchen. So that was really fun. Being able to just have those kind of outlets, getting back to what I always wanted to do. Like, I always told people when I was a kid, I was like, I want to be a chef. I always told people I wanted to be a pastry chef. And then I started doing pastry classes, and I was like, no.
too much science.
This is a science. I never liked science. Why did I think I wanted to cook this? So then I switched over to just regular chef type stuff. And that was fun, you know, and it was really fun getting back into the kitchen. It brought back a spark in me that I haven't really seen in a long time. You know, I had a big spark in me when I wanted to be the, when I was doing music and doing all that kind of stuff. But to find something where I was like, I know this is it. This is what I'm going to do. And that's really fun feeling to have, because a lot of people don't get that, you know. A lot of people are like, I never really know what I wanted to do or what I want to do. And I'm really grateful and thankful that I did was able to find that for me.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad, too. All of Omaha is benefiting now. So your first service on the food truck, June 19th, 2021 at Empire Liquidations, and you sold out your very first service. What do you remember most about that day?
So I used to go to – so one of the ways I was able to buy the food truck is I used to go to that place all the time. I'd go to buy Amazon return pallets and crazy things like that, storage auctions, and try to resell those things on eBay and all those kind of things. So I was going to that store every day, almost every other day. And I realized on Saturdays they'd have a line around the block waiting for people to get in there. And I was like – I always talked to the owner of the guy. He's about a guy about the same age as me, and so we always kind of connected and having kind of like an entrepreneurial spirit in us. And I was like, hey, man, I'm going to come out once I get this food truck. I'm going to come out on a Saturday, just set up and see what happens. And so we come out and we set up, and we set up real early because, you know, they open up at 9. And the line starts there about 5 in the morning.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah. It was it's because they get all these, like, Amazon pallets and crazy things. And whatever you get in there, you can buy it for $5. And so people were finding crazy cool things for $5. So lines were starting to form. And there was nothing around for people to eat, you know. And people were sitting in line for 2 hours. Their stomachs start to rumble. I was like, we'll just serve some breakfast, see what happens. So we started to serve breakfast, and my partner at the time, he was with me at that time, and he went to try, and it was his first ever, like, he just kind of partnered in the food truck venture with me. He's never done food or anything like that. He just said it sounded fun. So we're getting going, and all of a sudden we got a line starting. We're like, oh no, we're not ready for this. We're trying. But people were very patient with us. They knew it was our first go at it. And we ended up serving everything we had that day, and it was a great day. That's when I was really like, okay, there's something here. This could really work.
And you clearly, I mean, you said you weren't ready for that first service, mm-hmm. and things were a little chaotic, but you clearly ironed things out, because in the start of 2022, that's when you got a chance to move into the Grover Inn, mm-hmm. and you got a chance to use an actual kitchen as opposed to just being on the truck. When did you feel like you really got your processes honed in, so it's not like, oh, we're scrambling on the truck to make this happen, but it's like, this is a legit business. I'm feeling really good about this.
Yeah, so the truck had its hiccups, a lot of them. Some of them, like, they had some big engine problems on that truck, on that original truck. And so I went to one of my first big, like, corporate event. I went to FedEx and did 3 shifts for them. And I'm on my way home, and the truck just breaks down on the interstate, you know, and I spent all this money on the truck, all this money fixing it. And I'm just like, what is, I can't keep doing this, you know? So I ended up parking the truck at the commissary and just doing, like I said, the DoorDash, the Grubhub and everything like that. But there, I mean, it helped me hone in making stuff constantly day in, day out. And how to really hone that in. But I knew I needed a bigger space. I knew I needed some opportunity to really kind of move into a real kitchen. So I had a bunch of commitments or looking at spaces. And a lot of the spaces just needed a lot of work, didn't work out for whatever reason. And then I saw the ad for the Grover Inn, and I was like, we'll test this out. We'll see what's going to. So I go there. It's a tiny kitchen, open kitchen to the bar with one fryer, a flat top that's on top of a 4-burner. And it's just, you know, it's a dive bar kitchen. But if you can put food out on something like that, then you can really take it to the next level at other kitchens. And so very grateful for the Grover, you know, giving us an opportunity and putting us in there. They had some other people offering, but I just felt like our food was very elevated bar food at some points, you know, like burgers and wings and stuff like that. So we got into the Grover, and, you know, we would have some smaller days at the beginning, and then it started to really pick up where it was like, okay, there's something here. And then once we really start, we always playing with it, because it was still around, like, right after COVID, so DoorDash was really big, and so we had got reached out by this company to do a ghost kitchen out of there. We did like George Lopez tacos and Hot Box by Wiz and like random things like that, which really got me to playing with different food items. And I was like, so that's when I got into the Grover, was when I really decided that like, we just got to make sure that everything's coming out great. You know, everything, we're not in a food truck anymore. Cause we were doing DoorDash and stuff like that out of a food truck and negative degree weather, just parked. And like, it's hard to keep food hot when you're in a truck that's negative 20, and the dasher's taking 20 minutes to get there, and you're like, we were able to. We needed to move. We needed our own space, and I didn't want to spend more money on fixing up that truck anymore. So that's when I was like, we need to find something.
Mm-hmm. And to be clear, people can still go get your food at the Grover Inn.
Oh yeah.
But in January of 2024, you made the big announcement that you were going to be moving into the old Overeasy space off 168th and Q. What was it like for you? First of all, how did that opportunity become available? And then B, what is it like for you to not only have your own kitchen space, but your own restaurant?
Yeah. So I ended up, I've started acquiring a lot of kitchen equipment because I knew I wanted to kind of have my own space. The Grover Inn is great space. It's amazing. It's helped me get to where I wanted to be. But sometimes the family environment, I always wanted to have like a kid friendly kind of place, you know.
A dive bar isn't that?
I don't think so. You know, we get the
I feel you.
We get the families in there, but you know, it's hard to keep them coming back sometimes, you know. But the clientele we have with Grover's great, man. They love our food. They appreciate food. I wouldn't be where I am without the help that they've gave me. So that's 100% true. But I really wanted to have something where families could come to, have a great opportunity for anybody that wanted to come in, you know? And so I was looking at some spaces. The Overeasy space popped up. And so that was a great opportunity for us to take over. And so that's really how we got out. We wanted to be out west, you know, I wanted to try. I know a lot of places have gone out west, didn't work out. Some places go out west and it really works out, you know. And it's a tough place. Food's tough, you know. Omaha food, it's
a lot of options.
There's a lot of options, but we're lucky to have a lot of those like Facebook groups and a lot of support. There's a lot of Omaha foodies, you know. A lot of towns don't really have as much support, I think, as we do with food. Don't get me wrong, a lot of towns do support their restaurants, but for us, I think we have a lot of awesome ways to get out to the community. You know, a lot of options where people can find you. And that's something that's really cool about Omaha, is people are like, what's this new place? Let's try this new place. And people are really more open to trying things locally, which is awesome. You know, so we knew we wanted to get more of a family-friendly environment for our food. And so that's why we started looking out to a more west location.
Now, something that I always find fascinating when a restaurant expands to two locations, obviously you're one man, mm-hmm. you're one owner. You can't physically be in both places at once. And yet your name is on, it's in the name. So like when someone comes and they have a burger at Hyde Slides, they're expecting, you know, your stamp of approval is on this burger, whether you physically put it on there or not. How hard was that for you to be able to create, you know, a team and an environment at both locations that you could trust, where even if you're not at one, mm-hmm. you can still know that that quality of food is going to be where you would find it acceptable.
It's tough. It's very tough. I luckily I was at the Grover for about 3 years, and I had a great team there. Great team. That's, we don't have a lot of turnover. You know, I've maybe lost two guys for those 3 years. And so I've had guys with me for the start, you know, so they know what to expect. They know what to make. And those are the guys that I can trust to be running the kitchen when I'm not there, you know. But when you're expanding to another location with a lot more traffic in the door and everything like that, it was really tough. It still is very tough. I don't take many days off, if any. I don't think I've had a day off in 3 months, to be completely honest right now. But that's because I just want to make sure that the food's coming out right, you know. I got to make sure that because the team at the new location, there's a couple new guys, you know, they're veterans in the kitchen, but we got to make sure that they're doing what our procedures are, you know what I mean? And I got some guys that, I started overstaffing a little bit at the Grover just so, I have food truck season and stuff like that, and I want to be able to keep guys year round. So I was a little overstaffed, so I could make sure when I moved out here, I could have some people for both spaces that have been with me for a long time. I really enjoy not training people, but working with others. You know what I mean? Like I said, I had that bad experience when I was young right into the kitchen. So I really try to make my kitchen fun because I know it can get crazy, you know? And so when you have tickets to the wall, you want to make it fun. So I'm trying to just get the staff in place that just wants to be there. You know, once they have like pride into it, they want the burgers to come out how they're supposed to come out. And that's really where we're getting at right now, is everyone's like, yeah, we're making these right every time, and it's going out right every time, you know. So it's always just to the, like, how we put the sauces on. Certain sauces get circles, certain sauces get squiggles, you know. And then just like that is kind of trainings will help people realize what the portion control can be for those items, so we're not putting too much mustard to too much ketchup type thing, you know. And it's just figuring out those systems and procedures, which we're still figuring out, to make sure that everything comes out great.
That attention to detail absolutely comes out in the final product. I'm happy to report, Nick, I could talk to you just for much, much longer, and we didn't even make it through very much of my outline at all. Like, I'd love to talk to you more. Unfortunately, we're up against the clock, but this is my opportunity where, I mean, if you've been listening to this episode about burgers and fries for the last hour, you've heard it in his voice. You, like, he's not just slinging patties. He's established the science behind a smash burger. He's braising these onions down for hours and hours. Same with the barbecue sauce. He's very thoughtful about what flavors go into a wrap that won't work on fries. This is a guy who has spent a lot of time working on his recipes, and it comes through in the food. So Omaha, get out and see Nick, get his food. Nick, you talked about how busy you are. You haven't taken a day off, and yet you came and gave an hour to this podcast. Yeah. Thank you so much for your time, man.
Of course. Yeah, I'm excited to be here, man. 100%. It was a great time.
Omaha, as always, thanks for eating with us.
A Huda Media Production.